Okay. I don't even know if anyone's listening today because it's a day after Black Friday, and obviously everybody's going to be shopping, right? Well, maybe not everyone. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. My son-in-law got sick Thursday, Thanksgiving morning, and running fever. I don't remember if he was vomiting or not, but he chilled. He was shaking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's had diarrhea since Thursday afternoon, and he can drink and eat, but there's nothing in his system, and now then it's hurting. So what can we do for this diarrhea? He hasn't had any sleep all night long.
Oh, bless his heart. I just hate this for him. Well, let me give you several ideas, and some of these ideas may require a trip to the health food store.
We can do that.
There's a substance called activated charcoal. It looks like the color of a charcoal briquette, like somebody might barbecue with or cook, meat over a flame, something like that, hamburgers. So they have food-grade activated charcoal. Just take and open about 5 capsules, dump them in a glass of water, stir them up. It doesn't taste bad at all. It, of course, it'll make the water look as black as possible, but if he can sip on that frequently, then we can start to get through this. The other thing that's been shown to be helpful is a substance called carob, C-A-R-O-B. It looks just like chocolate chips. And so if you went to the health food store, they would have what are called carob. Sometimes they call them nibs. They look like little bitty pieces of chocolate, but it's not chocolate, it's carob. Carob is one of those types of fiber that soaks up poison in the body. So most likely the diarrhea is his body's trying to violently eject something. But the problem right now is he's dehydrated. I don't like that at all, but it's just the way it is. And so what we have to do is we have to start making him his own natural Gatorade. And one of the ways you do that is if you took a gallon of water, you can put a whole 12-ounce frozen canister of the Concord grape concentrate into it. And in his case, you probably need to go ahead and put about a tablespoon of sea salt. That could be everything. Oh, I'm sorry.
Just a minute. A gallon of water.
Mm-hmm.
And how much grape juice?
Well, they have those frozen concentrate, like in the frozen food section where they have fruit. Usually on that bottom shelf at the grocery store, once you pull that freezer door open, look down there. And they either have frozen lemonade, frozen apple juice, mm-hmm. or the frozen grape. Grape is the one that works the best.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we're trying to do is we're trying to get the moisture back into his cells so all his operating systems can start to work right and do their job. And so if you just use the whole canister, it's going to you're making just a very weak Gatorade. It's not like it's going to be super sweet. Now, if you did that to 3 canisters of water, it'd be sweet. But if you use an entire gallon of water, it's going to be purple. But it's going to be the very thing that helps rehydrate his body, which he desperately needs right now.
Okay, just water and grape juice?
Yeah, well, no, a tablespoon of salt.
Oh, and one.
So, but the salt that I like are the raw salts that haven't been chemically processed. So that's pink Himalayan salt, Celtic salt. I like Redmond salt. I think the stuff tastes good. Of course, I think Celtic salt tastes really good, too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to put like the juice of 1 or 2 lemons in there or limes, that'd probably make it even better. But if he can just sip small amounts of it, he's not trying to, the goal is not to chug the entire gallon in 1 minute. No. Just sip it frequently. The other thing that I would do if it were me is I would put him into a tub of hot water and just let him soak. See if he can soak up some water that way through his skin.
Okay.
He may be. How old is he?
Oh, he's about 48.
Poor guy. He's probably like lost all his strength, hasn't he?
Oh, yes.
So you give him
water.
Yeah. Well, goodness. You give him the charcoal water frequently. Let him sip on his homemade Gatorade. And if you have access to any type of probiotics, those can be either refrigerated beneficial microbes and bacteria. Man, I think if it were me, if I was in this situation, I think I'd probably take 1 hour all day long just to put some warriors in there to kind of fight whatever this is, whether it's a viral infection or a touch of food poisoning.
Okay.
Is he the only one that got sick?
Yes.
Nobody else? Okay.
No, he didn't even get to have Thanksgiving lunch with us.
Oh, so this is all before then?
It was that morning. Mm-hmm.
Okay, if he'll do these three or four things right here, and then when it comes to food, I think the first food I would try, if it was me, would be rice. And so if somebody could just cook some rice, but what you do is you really salt it well, where it's downright salty, and you put butter all over it. Melted butter on the rice.
Okay.
And so if he needs anything, a bite of that may go a long way to kind of soaking up some of the toxic waste and debris. But I think if you try those things, hopefully we can get him through this where he won't have to go and get an infusion put a bag of fluids in, which I'm not saying that's not good because it really is good, but is he home right now?
He is.
Okay. Are you going to be able to tell him all these things pretty easily, or his wife?
I am. I'm writing them all down.
Oh, good job. Well, please let me know how this works out.
I will, Dr. Morgan.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you.
Times.
Well, thank you for your phone call. I appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, if you'd like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open. It's 903-586-5257. Man, I remember it was maybe, it had to be like over 20 years ago. I did it to myself. Everybody was gone. I ate a can of chicken soup. I have never been so sick in my whole life. I literally thought I was going to die. So that's not really a laughable matter. Okay, let's go to the phone lines. And I did have one article that I wanted to cover. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. How about you, Dr. Morgan?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you so much for your phone call.
Yeah, I have a question. My wife and I both, our ears ring like buzz, buzz, buzz. Is there anything we can do to stop that?
Okay, this is a really complicated topic, and so let me give you two or three suggestions, and I'm really going to try to my best to be helpful. Number one. If somebody had a low-grade fungal residue in their ear canals, I've seen that cause the ringing in the ears. And once you take care of the fungus, the ringing goes away. But most likely, it's going to be you're just not getting enough blood flow to the ears itself. And so what you could try is you could always try taking what's called vitamin A. There are multiple studies showing that vitamin A is so healthy for the ears. It helps them to heal and get better, especially the circulation. The other thing that I would look at, if it were me, is I would look at taking an herb called ginkgo biloba. And there's another one called resveratrol. Resveratrol is kind of that pigmented polyphenol that you find like in the skins of dark grapes from blueberries, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So the other one that it can be is you look at magnesium. Sometimes I've had a person take just straight cayenne pepper, and they'll ask them the next day, how's your ringing now? And they'll say, it's not gone, but it's much better. Because that's one thing that cayenne pepper does. It tends to greatly open up and dilate the blood flow to the ears. Does that make sense?
Cayenne pepper on magnesium?
Well, you take those orally, yes.
Okay.
I wasn't suggesting you sprinkle cayenne pepper all over your ears.
Yeah.
You may not like me if you did that.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I hope that helps.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Okay. Every week, I find so many articles that I find are so intriguing and so interesting. But when I came across this one right here, I thought, you know what? This is really information that every human being needs to know. So let me read this to you. So if you'll give me just a few moments, we'll go back to the phone lines just for a second. But The title of the article, let me see here, I've already lost it. Okay, I don't know what the title of it is, but anyway, it's saying, basically, it's making a statement. It's saying, this is how physical exercise clears up tumors. So when I mention the word tumor, what does a person think about? Well, they think about cancer, don't they? And they think, that is the last thing that I want, is having a tumor growing anywhere in my body. I don't want one in my lungs. I don't want one in the liver. I don't want a colon tumor. I don't want a tumor on my kidneys. I don't want one in my bones or my brain. Anywhere else in the body. Breast, prostate. So, if you will, just consider this information. Whether you're completely the most radiant picture of health, and you're as close to perfect as a human being can be health-wise, or if you're in the worst situation possible, I think this information is good for all of us. Okay. And let me see, this comes from... there was an animal study done by Danish researchers published in 2016 in the journal Cell Metabolism. What it does is it explains how sessions of fairly intensive physical exercise work like a mini chemotherapy course. Folks, when I read that intense exercise or fairly intensive exercise acts like chemotherapy for the body, I thought, well, I'm going to read more about this. And so basically, it's going to go on to say that physical exertion transforms your body into a very hostile environment for cancer cells. I think this is something that's very good to pay attention to. So, for example, if you're going to an oncologist right now, well, you have every moral right to ask all the questions that you want. I think it's good to ask questions. I want everyone listening to take the attitude of being very, very curious and seeking knowledge and or seeking wisdom. That might be the better. No, both of those terms are valid. You want to be given all the options. Okay, here goes. This comes from Cell Metabolism Journal. Now, this is done in Holland, by the way. The researchers who work at the University of Copenhagen, wait, that's Denmark. Okay, I hope I got that right. The researchers who work at the University of Copenhagen, they gave a group of mice unlimited access to a treadmill that the animals ran in for about 4 to 7 kilometers every day. The name of the gym they had these rats join was called Roten Fitness. I made that up. I'm sorry. That's horrible, isn't it? Okay, the human equivalent of this amount of exercise would be about an hour working out at the gym. Okay? Do you get the gist of what I'm saying here? There is a level at which you must comply with in order to reap the benefits. Okay, after the mice had been running every day for 4 weeks on the treadmill, they were given an injection containing very aggressive cancer cells. And you're probably going, okay, what kind of cancer cells are we talking about? Well, they took it from the cancer cell line called the B16F10. These are melanoma cells. Melanoma is a bad news Magruder cancer, folks. 2 weeks later, these doctors from Denmark, they examine the mice. And, of course, you don't get to see what I see right here. And what I'm looking is I'm looking at these charts. So let me just kind of... So the mice, they had one group of mice run on treadmill for 4 to 7 kilometers a day. Then they had a group of mice that didn't run. Basically, they didn't get any... They didn't get the level of exercise that the mice or the rats on the treadmill got. Here's the results. The mice that had run, and that's the exercise group, they had a much lower tumor volume than the mice in the control group. It says also the mice that did run also had fewer metastases in their lungs. Now, the chart that I'm looking at, what they're doing is they're measuring tumor volume. They're just trying to ascertain, after 2 weeks of injecting very aggressive melanoma cancer cells. What do the tumors look like? Well, you can't see what I'm looking at right here, but in the exercise group, there were quite a few in there that had no tumor growth whatsoever, but some did. But it was like so much lower. If I was just kind of giving you a brief estimate right here, I would say it's at least a third less tumors than the ones that did not exercise. Are you with me so far? The cells in the tumors in the mice that had run produced more interleukin beta 1. And what they're doing here is, I don't mind telling you, they're trying to explain maybe how this works. And to me, this is very interesting. The cells that were in the tumors in the mice that had run, they produced more interleukin 1 beta, more interleukin 6, more interleukin 10, and more tumor necrosis factor alpha than the cells of the tumors of the inactive animals. So they're going, okay, what are we noticing here? These mice that are running on the treadmills, they're making a whole bunch more chemicals. Now, under normal circumstances, without a tumor, all these chemicals would probably be considered bad. But in the case of a cancer, this is considered very, very good. What this means is your immune system is rising to the occasion and trying to actually defeat the tumor. Okay, so these chemicals I just mentioned, I know it's too wordy, and my apologies. They activate immune cells, and those immune cells, they're found in high concentrations in the mice that are active on the treadmill. Now, the next one, what they're doing is they're measuring messenger RNA expression. You've already heard of messenger RNA. It's what the, quote, COVID vaccines are made of. And they're showing that the greatest amount of messenger RNA expression is among those that exercise. Now, when's the last time you've been told that exercise actually helps your body and your cells do its job better? They go on to say that physical exercise led above all to an increase in the number of natural killer cells. Have you ever heard the term before, natural killer cells of your immune system? What does that sound like to you to hear the term natural killer cells? Well, let me tell you what that means. Natural killer cells, this is what you want. I think you've heard me say in the past, the difference between a person that passes away from an illness at age 60 versus a person that lives all the way to 97 years of age, and you realize that's 37 years difference. I know that's a short time, but it's a lot longer where you could really do the purposes that God has laid on your heart. And you could keep growing in grace and knowledge, and you could be a real worker in the kingdom. They had those that lived to be 97 compared to those that died age 60. Well, they have about 10% more natural killer cells. So natural killer cells are the immune system shock troops. Think about the, I started to say blitzkrieg. I don't mean anything bad by that. I just mean they overrun the cancer cells as fast as possible. They are the very first cells that attack any aberrant or faulty or damaged cells or pathogens in the body. So if there's a cell that's decided not to go ahead and die like it's supposed to and just grow into a tumor and form a cancer, this is the job of the natural killer cells. Get down there, surround the tumor, eat it for breakfast, beat it up, get rid of it. So that's what you want. So to me, they're switching gears here. And so what they're doing is these Danish researchers are saying the potential of tumor-infiltrating natural killer cells is still being unraveled. That means they don't really understand how this works yet, but I'm interested in this. Natural killer cells are part of the early immune response, and they also activate other immune cells through the secretion of interferon gamma. This means natural killer cells are the spark to tell all your immune system to get down there and eat that tumor. And so, oh my goodness, the chart that I'm looking at is incredible. What they're doing is they're measuring the natural killer cells in these mice that were injected with very aggressive melanoma cancer cells. Those in the control group that did not exercise, they basically have the lowest possible measurable amount of natural killer cells. and the ones that exercise, it is off the chart, folks. Even though you can't see this, well, you can look it up for yourself. It comes from, well, Cell Metabolism 2016. The title of the article is How Physical Exercise Clears Up Tumors. Okay. I know this is way too technical, but it's just unbelievable. The other thing that the body has to have, they figured out, in order to get these natural killer cells to go after tumors, is they've got to have a little bit of adrenaline. And so the Danes discovered something that was really different here. Something else was needed as well to activate these natural killer cells. And the natural pep hormone, it is called adrenaline. And its relative, which is noradrenaline or norepinephrine. So epinephrine, norepinephrine. If they blocked these two hormones, that means adrenaline and noradrenaline, by giving the mice a beta blocker, the cancer-inhibiting effect of exercise disappeared completely. I was shocked when I read that, folks. Let me tell you what that means. That means if you're taking a beta blocker, it may inhibit the natural killer cells' ability to attack tumors. Now, when I read that, I did not have time this morning to do research on the computer about taking a beta blocker and the occurrence of cancer. So, anyway, somebody was just trying to call. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Okay. This book that I have in my hands right here, is the title of it is The Health Effects of Attitudes, Emotions, and Relationships. Somebody just tried to call. I didn't get it in time. My apologies. So, 903-586-5257. Now, how I came across this book, there is a resale shop in Tyler, and the cost of books, it was 10 cents on the day that I went. So, this book was written in 1992. It is phenomenal. Boy, I wish I had this years ago. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you doing?
Oh, great, thank you. Thanks for your phone call.
Thank you, sir. I was calling about a friend of mine who has stage 3 stomach cancer. They removed about a foot of her small intestine, and she started her first chemo treatments and stuff last week. I was just wondering what she could do to help her. I heard you talking about exercise, and that was good information. I will let her know, but...
Yeah, that's going to be a mind over matter deal right there, because she's going to say, I don't feel like it, I'm nauseated, I'm weak.
Right.
So it's going to be tough, but you're still going to encourage her anyway, aren't you?
Yes, sir, I am.
Can I tell you the first thing that popped in my head when you said that, though?
What's that?
Mushrooms.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't have the articles in front of me, but I mean, I'm telling you right now, that stuff is easy to look up. You know how easy it is today to go on the computer and type in, can mushroom extracts greatly help stomach cancer? And I think you're going to be shocked what you read for yourself. It's been a while since I've done that study. But no, here's the thought that popped in my head. You know how people like to drink coffee for breakfast, or they like to drink hot chocolate or hot tea?
Yeah, I do myself every morning, coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. But they do make, as an alternative coffee, they do make extracts that are based on lion's mane, Ganoderma mushroom, shiitake. There's one called chaga. There's the white button mushrooms. But these mushroom teas that you can drink, some people sell them online like it looks like mud once you stir them up. But, man, that's what I would do if it were me. And there's one mushroom in particular that I would really have your friend pay very close attention to. It's called turkey tail.
Turkey tail.
Yeah, it actually grows around here. I've seen it so frequently when I'm out in the woods. If you ever see where somebody has cut down a hardwood tree, I haven't seen any of these grow on pine trees at all, but on hardwoods like an oak tree. So if you cut one down, you come back and you go, wow, what is that weird fan tail looking thing growing? Well, that's probably a turkey tail. It just fans out like it's the shape of a turkey's tail when a turkey's kind of strutting around.
Right. Right.
But the thing of it is, these mushrooms, they are so good at removing poison from the body and helping the immune system do a better job to help itself, which is what the poor lady needs right now.
Well, and then she started having pains in her hip. And
oh, lungs, bless her heart.
Lungs and her kidney.
Well, so
in this short period of time, and see, what really is upsetting is I feel like the doctors are milking her insurance. That's what my older boy told me.
Uh-huh.
Because he was there with her trying to get something done, and they kept just giving her steroids and sending her home.
So he went with her, and she's saying, I have unbearable symptoms, and they said, here's steroids.
Yeah, and come back, and it did that like two or three times. He finally insisted on, you know, get a surgeon in here, do something. Surgeon sent her home with steroids again. When they finally cut her open, she's got stage 3 stomach cancer.
Okay,
you know, ridiculous.
Well, I'm so sorry about all this. What do you? Can I ask you a personal question? What do you think that she needs more than anything else right now? What do you think would help her more than anything?
A blessing from God.
Okay. Well, I agree with you. And that's what we should do. We should pray without ceasing that God would look upon her with favor and help strengthen her.
And that's why I'm talking to you. I'm trying to do something. You
know? Well, We gotta have to have some plan, because you know how this works. There's things that God can do that we couldn't do if we wanted to. That's called a miracle. And that's called, and actually, the very fact that she's alive and breathing right now, and you are and I am, it's only because God is giving us the breath of life. Do you agree with that?
Yes, sir.
And so she's got her responsibility, but I thought if with the stomach cancer, she could start sipping on mushroom tea right now. And I'm trying to think the name of it. It's like 4-Sigmatic. Is that what they have at the health food store? Where do you live, by the way?
I used to live in Athens, and I moved up here to Minnesota 3 years ago.
Gotcha. Well, if they have a health food store close by, what you would do is you go to the aisle where they sell all the herbal teas, and then you look for those mushrooms. You just pour the mushroom powder into a cup of hot water and start sipping on that.
Okay. Yeah, and she's still in Texas.
Oh, she's in Texas? Well, wherever she is, even if you bought some and mailed it to her to get the ball rolling, that wouldn't be bad. But I would do that. And the next thing she's got to do is she's got to either get an exercise bicycle, like a recumbent bicycle, and she's got to get on it and start moving. And that's the whole article that I just read.
I know.
So when you move, you're telling your body, I need you to heal this damaged tissue.
That's what I've started doing. I've lost like 70 pounds in the last 6 months.
Oh, wow. You sure it's not from freezing to death when you're on your sled team of dogs?
No, actually, it's warm up here. The snow's melting again, but it'll come. But anyway, I'm doing what you say. I get up first thing in the morning. I go out here to my garage, and I get on a Wind Aerodyne.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
About 10 or 15 minutes, you know, and then I do my stretching, and I have back problems. And
yeah, but you're running toward trying to fix it. Way to go.
Yeah, I can pop my own back now, you know, and it gives a lot of relief. And
well, good.
I mean, you know, and that's what I'm trying to emphasize to my older sister, you know. She's about to die. I told her, if you don't get up and move, you're going to die. You know, every time about all the pain and all of this. And I said, you know, and I've told her about you, and she ain't listening this morning because I called her and she ain't up. She's sleeping.
Well, that's all you can do is just encourage somebody, but maybe your persistence and your encouragement will pay off.
Oh, I'm helping her because I can tell the difference in her attitude just in her voice, you know, that getting her to believe in God, number one, and he's on your
There's
side.
A reason to be thankful right there.
You know, and she's coming around. God bless you. You know, thank God. Anyway.
Well,
I just want to talk to you, and I appreciate you so much, and God bless
you.
Oh,
you're so welcome. Thank you, and I sure am rooting for you. Have a good day, sir.
Thank you. You too.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This book that I bought for 10 cents, it's really, really outrageously good, because I thought to myself, how can they get all this research together without computers? I just don't understand that. Anyway, there was a study done, and this is, I kind of started at the end of the book, page number 535, chapter 27. But I like the chapter. It's called Protecting Health with a Fighting Spirit. And so there's a section called The Role in Recovery from Disease. And here goes. Physicians have found that a fighting spirit can play a major role in recovery from disease. In one study, attitudes of patients faced with serious illness fell into one of four categories. And this is important right here. You're going to be in here somewhere. I don't know where you are. You'll either have a fighting spirit, or you'll be in denial. Some people, they fit the category of stoic acceptance. And then there's a group called helplessness or hopelessness. They go on to say that people with a fighting spirit fully accept the diagnosis. Okay? That's like saying, doctor, now that we know what my problem is, I accept that. I've heard your report of findings. I understand why it is. But once they accept the diagnosis, a person with a fighting spirit, they adopt this optimistic attitude filled with faith. You know what the word faith means? It means, yes, Lord, I hear what you're telling me, and yes, sir, I will do it. That's like a coach telling a player, listen to what I have to say, follow my instructions and execute. Well, that's what faith is. Yes, I hear you, and I will do it. They also seek information about how to help themselves. Well, isn't that what this program's all about? So you're trying to find out every source of information that you can put your faith and your hope in. And so when they do this, they are determined to fight the disease. Their attitude is, I won't let cancer beat me. I'm trying everything to get better. Now, in a study at King's College Hospital in London, researchers followed women with breast cancer that had not yet spread beyond the breast. That is not stage 3 or 4. That would be stage 1. All were given a simple mastectomy. Okay? 5 years after the surgery, those with a fighting spirit were always the most likely to be alive and free of recurrences. Now, they said that patients with denial, they either reject the diagnosis of serious illness completely, or they minimize its importance. A mastectomy patient who is a denier, for example, might voice the belief that the doctors just took off my breast as a precaution. In the King's College Hospital study, the deniers were the second most likely to be alive and free of recurrence at the end of the 5-year study period, which is kind of what I thought of. This is me adding to it. Maybe they didn't worry about it, okay? They weren't anxious. They didn't worry. Patients with what researchers call a stoic acceptance, they accept the diagnosis, but it stops there. They do not seek further information. They do not take steps to participate in their own recovery, and they merely adopt a fatalistic attitude. Their attitude becomes one of, and I quote, I know what it is, I know it's cancer, but I've got to carry on as normal, there's nothing I can do. Those who express stoic acceptance, they have a much more grim outlook for survival, according to the researchers in the King's College Hospital study. Now here's the last group. The group of patients who express helplessness or hopelessness, they absolutely have the poorest prognosis, say the researchers. Unlike deniers, they accept the diagnosis and they realize its seriousness. If anything, they exaggerate it. Unlike the Stoics, they don't vow to carry on as normal. They feel engulfed by their diagnosis, and they allow their entire life to become disrupted. And usually that makes matters worse. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Well, thank you for your phone call.
Yes, sir. Back in 2015, I had cancer. And as you said, attitude is everything. I had a natural doctor that told me if I didn't get the stress, out of my life, I wasn't going to make it. I started standing on the words, Psalm 118:17, I shall not die, but live and declare the works of the Lord.
Is that what that says?
Yes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Psalm 118:17.
I'm writing that down.
And fear is torment. The Lord didn't give us a spirit of fear, but a power and love and of a sound mind.
Yes.
Anyway, I thank God for my natural doctor. I thank God for you because you were him in 2015. I love you, Dr. Morgan.
Well, thank you for your phone call.
I hope the people listen to you because attitude is everything.
How long did it take you to completely adjust your attitude about the situation?
Not very long.
Well, see, to me, that is utterly amazing because you know as well as I do, it is hard to change the attitude, isn't it? But you can if you want to.
Yes, and I had hate and I had unforgiveness for my brother. And that's what I had to get out with God's help. He helped me love my brother, get all that unforgiveness, all that stress out. And that's when I had my healing.
Oh, wow.
That's when I became healed and I overcame it.
What a beautiful story. I'm so glad you called to mention that.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much for your phone call. And you've given everybody a lot to be grateful for. Thank you very much.
Yes, I had 3C breast cancer next to terminal.
Oh, wow. Well, you're an incredible story. Thank you so much for your phone call, ma'am.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
If you'd like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line once again open at 903-586-5257. I'll get you right in. You know, I know this is going off on a different idea here, but I started thinking yesterday, you know, what would this be like if you were a deer living in the woods? Do you ever have a chance to take the day off? No, every day you're striving, you're fighting for survival. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, sir. A question. I'm going to get, you know, donate some blood because you've talked about this. Unsulfured molasses, it's got like 20% iron, a large amount of calcium. Is that bad to take?
I don't want to say it's bad to take, and let me tell you the main reason why. Number one, it's food. It really is. And I remember there was a very famous British healer by the name of Cyril Scott. I always thought Cyril was like a great name.
It is.
But he that's what he had back in 1901. So if he had a woman in front of him and she had horrible menstrual cramps and she had cysts on her ovaries and she was in misery and didn't have normal menstruation, he would give her blackstrap molasses and it would heal her. Because it's minerals, and minerals are what run the show in the human body. So I like that. But the only thing that I would have a caution, if somebody has a huge load of iron in their body, molasses may add to that. That's probably the only caution I have. But if it was a woman that's having a menstrual cycle where every 28 days she loses some of her blood, that's where it really makes sense.
All right. So after you gave blood, then that would be better then to take it.
Well, no, for a woman, yes.
Yes, but for a man.
But for men don't have menstrual cycles, and so what they do is every day of their life they tend to accumulate more iron.
Right.
That's why if you look at a lab test called ferritin, ferritin is a marker that tells your body how much iron you're holding in reserve. But really, we should call it the old rusted dead graveyard of rusting oxidizing iron marker.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So yeah, if you have them measure that marker, have them measure ferritin. I think that'll tell you a lot. It's kind of like the other day, I think I told you, I mean through the radio, that when they looked at the observance of Alzheimer's or the incidence, When ferritin levels were 126 and above, they always had Alzheimer's. But when ferritin levels were between 25 and 30, there was no Alzheimer's. That's because the more old rust you have in your body, the quicker you're going to age. You're going to wear out everything, including the brain.
Yes, and I take notes on your program all the time.
Oh, so, well, okay. Well, I'm sure honored that you do that.
Well, it's kind of like I majored in science, but I've learned more off of your program than I ever learned in biochemistry. So,
how would you do if you took a biochemistry final examination right now?
Well, it's so theoretical. You know, really, it's all in the theory. Chemical reactions. Now, I'm not saying that's bad, but the practical part that you talk about is what people need.
I'll give you $5 cash if you can tell me the name of my biochemistry teacher.
Okay.
I'm just joking. Her name was Virginia Wolfenberger. How would you like to have the name Dr. Wolfenberger?
Quite a good German name, isn't it?
Oh, she ruled with an iron fist. Now, when I was in school, if I acted up, I had to go in front of the class and hold out my hand so she could pop it really hard with a yardstick. Did that happen to you?
Well, no, thankfully that's never happened.
Well, that's because you're well behaved all the time.
Well, sometimes.
Well, thank you very, very much for your phone call.
Well, thank you for all you do.
Oh, you betcha. You're sure welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Have a great weekend, buddy. Bye-bye. Okay, if you would like to join me on the radio, there's a little bit of time left. Actually, there's plenty of time left. Call and ask me whatever questions you like. I'd be glad to help you. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Good morning.
Would you speak on copper intake for the body? I just purchased a copper mug because I read online about the benefits.
Really? So you were so inclined to purchase a copper mug, huh?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I'd be glad to talk about copper. Did you want me to talk about it with you on the phone with me?
No, I'll just...
Okay, all right, I get you. Well, thank you very much for your call, and thank you for your question about copper.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so this is going to be maybe a little bit different information, but just kind of hear me out here. You've heard me talk about how if you watch Western with John Wayne in it, especially the ones that are in color, if you look at his wrist, he's got a copper band on there. And you have to ask the question, why would John Wayne wear a copper band? Well, you probably have heard that a copper band is one of the treatments for dealing with pain in the body and arthritis. Now, there's so much information that's just flooding us. And one of the topics that I get over and over again in all the emails and the stuff that comes up on the internet is about consuming antioxidants. And so, for example, most people have heard that vitamin C is a very powerful antioxidant. And some people have said that glutathione is one of the most powerful antioxidants, or alpha-lipoic acid, or the enzyme glutathione peroxidase. Well, the more that I study the topic, I tend to go into the camp of there is an enzyme called ferrooxidase, okay, and what that does is it keeps iron from rusting. It's so powerful, it's unbelievable. And there's another one called ceruloplasmin. Both of those can be measured by a blood test if your doctor is inclined or if they can find a lab that can do that. Between ceruloplasmin and ferrooxidase, these may end up being by far and away the most potent antioxidants. And what they do is they keep your body from rusting out or from aging prematurely. Does that make sense? I think just about everybody here is on the same page. They want their physical bodies to be in the best working order as long as God sees fit for them to be walking the earth, right? And you'd also agree that the body is a temple of the Holy Spirit, and so how you take care of that, it has everything to do with your ability to continue to excel and to be efficient and to do your work and to change lives and make the world a better place. And so you have this idea that you're going to have to take good care of your body. If you want to perform at a high level and you want your body to be your vehicle that carries you here and there, you got to have a body that works well. So you need a way to help your body stay in good working order. So enter copper. Two of the most important enzymes that in the human body between ceruloplasm and also ferrooxidase, well, they're copper dependent. And so if a person is lacking copper, there's going to be a whole bunch of healing that just goes undone. So it used to be that our soil was so rich and replete with all these minerals, but that was a long time ago. That is not the way it is now. Thus, you could probably build a case very easily if you just looked at studies on soil being very deficient or depleted and taking a supplement. And so there's a lot of physicians out there and maybe registered dietitians, they do not believe for one second that you should ever take a supplement. Now, I always remind myself of the fact that if you go into a hospital, whichever one it is, a registered dietitian has to completely approve of all the foods that are produced in the cafeteria. They have oversight. And they also have to approve of the patient waiting area where they have vending machines. And you already know where I'm going with this, but you can't tell me that anything in that vending machine is good. It ain't. But it's approved because it provides calories. But what it doesn't provide you, it provides you no nutrients. There's no nutritional value. So when you put a food that's rich in sugar, those are called empty calories. The reason they're empty is because they don't provide any minerals such as copper or zinc or magnesium or potassium in order to process the food. So the only way they can be processed is by sucking all the nutrients out of you or depleting you. So isn't it time to stop being worn down? Of course it is. But when you sip water or tea from a copper cup, you're getting a smidgen of copper. I really don't know how much. I have read before it's up to 12 milligrams a day with a copper bracelet or a copper band. But you know, it used to be that we would use copper in our kitchens and bathrooms and all the plumbing of a house. And that's probably a very, very good thing. But almost all people are very copper deficient, just like I would say just about all people are magnesium deficient. And which I know I'm just choosing to say this next statement, but most people are low in copper and magnesium at the same time. They just are. So you either decide to supplement with that or come up with a strategy like drinking from a copper kettle or a copper pan or a copper mug. I meant cooking in a pan, that's what I meant to say. But that's one of the ways you'll start getting copper in the body. But copper is so critical for energy production. And so ask yourself this question: do you have as much energy in reserve as you need to do everything you need to do? Well, if you're playing out real quick, if you wake up and all you can do is drag your carcass over to the couch and lay down for a few hours before you get up and do anything, I would say you have no energy. The type of energy that I'm referring to is the kind that you cannot sit still. You've got to be up and productive and doing something. I mean, I just really, really wonder what would happen if everybody had to do a 12-hour day in an agrarian society on the farm. That would be tough, wouldn't it? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
I think I can hear you racing down the highway at 110.
Well, actually, I have now stopped.
Oh, good. Excellent.
I have a couple questions for you. You're talking about water with copper. What can we flavor water with that we don't need to take these sugar drinks?
Lemon, lime. You can even dilute it with grape, and you could add salt to it.
Okay.
Or you could just do the simple thing, herbal tea.
Okay.
Have you ever tried hibiscus tea?
No, but I've got some.
Oh, good. Well, I want you to try it and tell me if you like it. I think it's excellent for you.
You've always done good in the past. Also, I've got two other questions on foods. Number one, what are good foods for weight loss programs? And also, what are foods that would help me at night so I don't feel like I need to eat some more?
Okay, number one, you've got to get your body used to eating real foods, and that's going to be eggs and fish and chicken.
A little bit of beef.
Well, I think you're going to be good. If you don't eat, now let's talk about this just for a brief moment. If you had four eggs instead of two, you may tell me that all of a sudden your appetite, it sticks to your bones a lot longer. And so what you'll have is your insulin levels will go down. When your insulin levels go up, that's when you crave food at night.
Okay.
So you, as a general rule, the less carbohydrates you eat at the end of the day, the better your sleep is at nighttime. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
And so the goal is eating probably a little bit more protein and fat and a little bit less carbohydrates. And if you can stick with that long enough, your body will adapt to it and you won't need the carbs at night.
Okay. Great. Thank you so very much. Your wisdom is always great for us, and I know we all appreciate it.
Well, thank you for your kind words. I appreciate you. Be safe on the road wherever you're going to.
God bless you.
God bless you, buddy. Bye-bye. Oh, boy. I think I copied off an article about 2 weeks ago talking about the role of carbohydrates and the quality of deep sleep. And, yeah, they showed that when a person eats a lot of carbohydrates at the end of the day, you know one thing that could look like? I don't know really how common this is. I just think it's common. But there's a lot of men especially, they load up on a big bowl of Blue Bell ice cream right before they go to bed. Of course, I don't know. Do they just take and eat out of the carton until it's all gone, or do they use a bowl? I really don't know. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line open at 903-586-5257. Okay, I'm just going to make up a meal here for you. Let's just say that you want to try the concept of intermittent fasting where you skip breakfast. And your very first meal of the day, you wanted to make it four eggs over easy. You can cook them in butter, coconut oil, olive oil, and you have an avocado. And then if you want to salt it or pepper it or season it with something else, could you eat that as a meal? That would promote weight loss. Good morning and welcome to the program. Hello.
Good morning. I'm sorry, I was turning off my radio.
Oh, no, you're doing great.
Okay, good morning, Dr. Morgan. I'm so excited that I was...
Yeah, well, I'm glad you got in. Way to go.
And you are truly a blessing to not only this area, but other areas of the country.
Well, you're so sweet. Thank you.
Well, I wanted to ask you a question about when I lay on my left side, is it the bursa? It feels like I'm laying on like a pool noodle.
Well, do you mean on your hip?
Down okay. To my side, that side. Like if you,
yeah, there's a bursa there. Mm-hmm.
And then there's pain that goes down your leg. And
yes,
so
ma'am.
I was wondering if you had any advice on relief other than going to get an injection.
Well, if I could talk you into three things, this is what I would talk you into. Number one, try taking fish oil before you go to bed every night. And then try taking what's called vitamin
K2.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, over the course of every day, if you want this to go away.
Yeah.
And you know how easy this is today? You can go to a website called YouTube and you can type in body weight squat.
Okay.
If you can build up to where you can do at least 50 squats a day, all that pain will go away.
Oh, but you don't mean all the way down to the floor, do you?
Well, you have to find the way that you can do it. So like if a person were really, really older and feeble,
uh-huh,
they might just do it a quarter of the way. They might just do a quarter squat. Not all the way down, just one-fourth of the way. That
okay.
still works.
Really?
Yeah, so you got to find a way to do it that your body can handle. I don't want you hurting yourself. But, yes, if I had my way, you would eventually get to where you can go all the way down very easily. And if you do, guess what? You won't need hip replacement or knee replacement one day.
Yeah, my friend's mother is having a second total hip replacement in a couple of weeks.
You mean an additional hip or the same hip done again.
No, her other one.
Oh, the other one. Gotcha.
Yes.
Well, if you lose your strength, that's what always leads to bursitis. So I'm not trying to criticize you at all. I'm just trying to encourage you. Yeah. You've got to get your hips in good working order. So body weight squats are just incredible for fixing all that.
Oh, amazing.
And they're free.
They're free. They are. And I do have a job where I sit all day in front of
you. There you go.
I should probably stand up.
You could actually stand up every hour of the day, and you could do 10 quarter squats.
Oh, I can do that.
It won't take you 10 seconds. One, two, three. Well, that's a little fast. How about 20 seconds?
Okay.
Yeah. And as you get stronger, you're going to say, wow, this is amazing. I can't believe I can lay in bed without pain. I think I could get used to this.
So it's a lack of strengthening that
anytime that your hips become weak, you're going to have bursitis and tendonitis. I mean, I could go into greater detail, but as long as you can just buy into what I'm saying, that the bursa becomes swollen when you lose your strength. And right. See, that's why it was kind of a scary proposition for you, thinking, is he asking me to squat all the way down to the ground with my feet pointed straight and my feet flat with my bottom on the back of my heels? Yes. But if you can't do that, then do what you can do. But eventually, that's your goal, to getting all the way down. And you want to, personally, I'm going to tell you what I think.
Yes.
If you can't eventually get down and hold that full squat for 5 minutes, then you're headed toward hip surgery.
Okay. I'll work on that.
Good. And I like to hear that.
Yes. But transitioning on the 8th of December, I'm having a ganglion cyst removed from my toe. That's no weight on my right foot for 4 weeks.
Is it the top of the foot?
Yes.
I don't really think you have anything to worry about. I mean, that's just my opinion. Listen to the podiatrist if you want to on that deal.
Yeah.
But you know how weak you're going to become if you give into it?
I have to have my school.
So what are they saying? Are they saying that you can't walk?
Yeah, no body weight, no weight.
Well, what is standing up? That's body weight. I'm sorry, go ahead. What are they telling you not to do?
No, I was just thinking. I went, well, true, so I'll just have to put my, if I put my knee on a scooter, I have to do that to get around because I can't walk.
All they're doing is just removing a cyst from the dorsum or the top of your foot, right?
Yes.
Do you know that cyst is not in a weight-bearing location? It has nothing to do with weight-bearing.
Well, that's true.
I would ask them one more time. I'm going to say, now, you're telling me that you want me to put my leg on a scooter? Why?
So that I don't put my weight on the foot.
Oh, I get that, but I want to know, why are you saying that? And if they respond and say, because I don't want you to put weight, I want you to say, why don't you want me to put on weight? And when they say, because I say so, well, can you show me a study?
Right.
Show me a because it's in a non-weight-bearing position. It has no bearing on the matter.
Huh.
It's just that you will become so physically weak from being on that scooter, it's going to take you 6 months to recover from that. And every day you're going to turn to your husband and say, sweetheart, could you go get the groceries for me? Because I can't move.
Exactly.
You don't want to do that. Life is movement.
I do have a little a foot sandal with a heel thing. It's more of a heel for the pressure with it. And so
there was a study recently where they went to the African Serengeti and they took a bunch of gazelles that were wild. They shot them with sleeping darts, and they removed ganglion cysts from their hooves, and they put them on scooters. And they told them they couldn't do any weight-bearing running away from lions. Guess how long they lived?
Oh.
The lions ate him real quick. I'm just making this up.
Oh, Dr. Moore.
I am joking, but you in the real world, this doesn't even make sense.
Yes.
All you're asking is scar tissue to build up by letting it sit there. Move it, baby. Anyway.
Just walk on my heel.
No, the ball of your foot. Why would you do that? That's not natural to walk on your heel.
Right.
He's saying don't walk. Well, there may be more to the story than what I realize, but you'll just have to call me back because we're completely out of time for today. About that.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
I'm so happy that I got you. Thank you.
Oh, good deal. Thank you, ma'am. Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.